I have a real basic question to begin today. How many of you have running water at your house? Everybody? Isn't that a good thing? Not at the moment. Okay, we'll be over this afternoon to do a little plumbing at your house, I guess, Steve. Has it always been true that you had running water where you live? Not always for some people, although we're starting to get to generations now where it's hard to remember what that was like. Maybe you've done so when you were camping or something like that, but most of the time at home, we have it pretty easy. Have you ever had to use one of those old school wells? You know, you got to pump the thing. How many of you have done that? Okay, it's pretty hard work. Yeah, fill the bucket up, you know, after pumping. First of all, you got to get it primed and going, and then you fill it up and you carry it all the way back to where you are. And, you know, it's pretty hard to get water in your bucket. You pump for that, too. This is going to be a fun sermon today. I'll never know what's going to come out of my mouth, apparently. So, you know, in a lot of parts of our world, it's still that way, isn't it? You know, they don't have plumbing. They don't have toilets. They don't have running water. They don't have showers. They've got to find some way to get down to the local body of water, if there is such a thing. You know, I saw a picture of people in Africa drinking out of a puddle. You know, it's heartbreaking. So this is not where much of the world lives. In the story that we're going to read this morning from John chapter 4, if you want to start turning there, this woman is going to a well. All the people had to go to a well. It was out some distance. It was a very famous well, Jacob's well. But they would have to go out there and they'd have to collect the water. And the way that they got it was they would send something down by rope, some kind of a vessel, some kind of a probably clay pot with a handle, down into this well, which she says very deep, and collect the water, then bring it to the surface, you know, pull that whole thing up, all that dead weight, get it to the top, pour it into whatever container they brought from home, and then carry it all the way home again. That was the only way to get water. And so repeatedly, they would go back to get more water, and she's there getting it for her and her household the day that she encounters Jesus. This woman's personal encounter with Jesus was one of the most remarkable encounters anyone has ever had. What happened to her in just a few minutes of time is simply amazing. In just a short conversation, I mean, just really minutes of time, and the time that it took for the disciples to walk into the village, grab some lunch, and bring it back to Jesus out at the well, in that amount of time, Jesus had a conversation with her. And this conversation that began between two complete strangers changed her life. It's amazing. How is that possible? You know, what did Jesus do? What did he say? How did his words somehow impact her so strongly, just stopping her in her tracks and making her rethink her whole life? How was that possible? What an amazing conversation. Jesus should never have even spoken to her, but when he did, it changed her life. So I want you to start thinking about this woman at the well, kind of keep her in your mind throughout this time that we're in the message today and even afterwards. People like her that are completely trapped by her circumstances, trapped by the bad choices they've made up to this moment when they meet Jesus. She really didn't see any way out. She didn't see any way to change her life. She just kept repeating the same thing and hoping for better results, which we know is being crazy. Things never got any better, at least not until she met Jesus. And then her whole life was changed. Amazing encounter. So let's go to our text today. It's in John chapter 4. We're going to start right with the very first verse. You follow along on the screen or your own Bible, please. The Pharisees heard that Jesus was gaining and baptizing more disciples than John, although in fact it was not Jesus who baptized, but his disciples. And when the Lord learned of this, he left Judea and went back once more to Galilee. So he stopped that activity. He started going through Galilee. Now, he had to go through Samaria, so he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. And Jacob's well was there. And Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about the sixth hour. And when a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into the town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "You are a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask for a drink? How would you go about asking me for such a thing?" And then John comments, "For Jews do not associate with Samaritans." We're often fearful and hesitant to intrude in the lives of other people, aren't we? Especially lost people we may not be able to identify that much with. But Jesus didn't see things that way. Jesus was always looking for opportunities like this. He tried to make most of those opportunities. And Jesus' impact on this Samaritan was not accidental. It was very deliberate. He's out there at the well. He sees this woman come up. He didn't shy away. Okay, this is why I'm here. This is what I'm supposed to do. He was intentional. So he took this direct path through Samaria when he didn't have to. You know, most of the Jews would have skirted around Samaria. They didn't like to go there. They didn't like to be around the Samaritans. But Jesus is deliberate. And he gets into the middle of this area, and he comes to this well, and here comes a Samaritan woman. Obviously from her dress, obviously from her demeanor. They're not supposed to talk, but Jesus is not going to be held back by that. Jesus often did the unexpected. And I really like that. I like that Jesus stepped out of what was conventional. He broke down the barriers of social conventions in order to love people, in order to serve people. He's not going to be prevented from ministering to someone because of some social rule or protocol, you know. And worry about those kinds of things. He saw a person who needed what he could offer, and so he spoke to her. And so in John 4, Jesus went through Samaria. He talked to a Samaritan and a Samaritan woman. Men were not supposed to talk to women publicly that they did not know. And he asked her, this outsider, this person Jews would not associate with, he asked her for a drink of water, knowing that if she did give him a drink of water, he would be drinking from a dirty vessel belonging to a class of people he's supposed to hate. And just think this, how this is set up here. Jesus is deliberately doing this. So Jesus went where no one expected him to go. He said what no one expected him to say. And I wonder if we are as willing to do that, as willing to break down the barriers that exist everywhere. Jesus is willing to do that. Jesus is bold. Jesus knew his mission was to seek and to save lost people, so he didn't let social rules get in the way. Now, what can we learn from his example about working with lost people in our context? People that we hope will open up to God, but so far they're closed off. They're even kind of trapped in their lives. And what can we learn from this classic textbook example out of Jesus' playbook? I want you to think this through. And on the back of your bulletin, there's a place you can write some notes. I really hope you'll do that, because I really want you to think about what we can do like Jesus, because this is the master at work. This is the guy that knows what he's doing, and he's doing it perfectly in this personal encounter with the Samaritan woman at the well. How he gained a small foothold in her life and then saved her is a classic example of the ways that we need to interact with people so that they can come to know God and his will in their lives. What did he say? What did he do? What was his attitude? How did he react and respond to her questions? What was he praying while he encountered this woman and her fellow villagers, which he gets to do later that day? You know, we can learn so much from what Jesus said and did here in this story. We've already put two items on our list. Let's add to our list. Let's go down to John 4. Go back, actually, to verse 7 again and pick up from there. Verse 7. Let me find it here. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "You are a Jew. I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans." Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." Well, it must have caused her to roll her eyes a little bit. "What? What?" "Sir," the woman said, "you have nothing to draw with. The well's deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his flocks and herds?" Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. but whoever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life. Now her eyes are really rolling. And the woman said to him, Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep drawing here, coming here to draw water. And here's where Jesus turns a corner. He said, Go call your husband and come back. I have no husband, she replied. But Jesus said to her, You're right when you say you have no husband. The fact is you've had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true. Now her eyes are rolled in the back of her head. Sir, the woman said, I can see that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem. Jesus declared, Believe me, woman, a time is coming when you will worship the Father, neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming, and has now come, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshipers must worship in spirit and in truth. The woman said, I know that Messiah called Christ is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us. Then Jesus declared, I who speak to you am he. Just then his disciples returned and were surprised to find him talking to the woman. But no one asked, What do you want, or why are you talking with her? Then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, Come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ? They came out of the town and made their way toward him. How did Jesus begin his conversation? He asked her for favor. He asked a favor of this complete stranger. Now, don't miss this. His conversation starter wasn't something he wanted to do, something he wanted to get. He put himself at the point of being this humble person in need. His conversation starter was asking a favor. Will you give me a drink? Will you draw water for me? He humbled himself and asked a favor of a woman whom he should not even be talking to. Asking for a favor, of course, is not the only way to start a conversation with a stranger. But notice how disarming it is. When he does so, his request for help elevated her importance, disarmed her fears. And she's like, wait a minute, this Jewish man who wouldn't even normally talk to me is asking me for a drink. And she's totally disarmed by that. And this is a beautiful thing. You know, in our initial conversations with people, we often, you know, have this whole game plan. We have this whole thing we're going to say, okay, and I'm going to just blast them with this, or I'm going to make sure it goes a certain way. But in our initial conversation, we could simply ask someone for information that they probably have, or could seek their expertise because of their position, or maybe the training. You know, the person, you can tell who they are, you can tell what they do, and you go up to them and you ask them for something that you need, whether you really need that all or not. You begin the conversation by expressing a need of your own and asking for help. It takes humility. But doing so disarms the awkwardness of meeting someone new, and it puts them more at ease. This is a classic thing. Jesus is not pretending humility. He has humility. And he really wants to have this conversation. Another thing that's so obvious that we might miss is that Jesus talked to her alone. He chose the moment when the rest of the disciples were not there. We would have chosen the moment when we had the backing of our friends. Now we'll go talk to this lost person. Now we'll go talk to the person who needs Christ, because there's four of us. We feel strong. We may avoid new conversations with strangers when we are alone, but often they're actually much easier to get into when we are alone rather than when we're with someone we know. When we strike up a conversation with someone while we are alone, our conversation can become deeper, faster, because now they, you know, feel more at ease. It's just one-on-one. Nobody else is going to hear whatever's said. And approaching them is less difficult for the stranger. It is less intimidating, especially if we're already on their turf. You know, we've gone to their place. We're asking a favor. We're asking a question. And it's just us. So I want to encourage you, don't wait to talk to strangers until you're with someone that you know. So when you feel stronger, because actually there's beauty in this one-on-one conversation. Strike up this simple, non-threatening conversation, and then hopefully it will go deeper slowly. So as the conversation unfolds, we're going to have to move quickly. Notice, thirdly, that Jesus prompted curiosity in the woman's mind by some of the things he said. He started talking about living water, and she's like, what? What is living water? She wondered, what is this strange man talking about? So Jesus had given her something kind of puzzle over. He's inviting her to think of things that she hadn't thought of before, to go somewhere where her mind had not gone before. He didn't try to move things too quickly. He waited for her response. So when you go to talk to somebody about Christ, you're beginning to, you know, open up a new relationship, don't assume that you know what the other person's questions will be. Just prod their minds, prod their situations a little, and let them ask questions. Let them explore anything that they may become curious about. Don't try to steer the conversation to where you're comfortable. Let it go where it will, so that they can truly be involved and truly be asking the questions that they have in their hearts. Jesus just gave people something to puzzle over. He tried to help them seek out and discover the truth that God was trying to reveal to their hearts all along. You know, God's already been working on their lives, but they've just kind of been pushing him back, ignoring him. Jesus is there face to face. Let's just prod a little bit. Let's just ask a few things. Let's say things that cause them to question. And let's not try to move things along too quickly. Whether she realized it or not, Jesus had drawn this Samaritan woman closer and closer to the truth. He was revealing truth. She's questioning. She's wondering where he's going. But the conversation's becoming deeper and more real as it begins and gets going here. Her personal encounter with Jesus is becoming more and more profound. And then Jesus went deeper. Jesus went for the hurting places of her life. And this is where he could go that we couldn't. We're not, you know, the Son of God. We don't see into somebody's heart. But Jesus knew her situation. You have a husband, but he's not the first one you've had. You've actually had five. And the man you're with now is not even your husband. You've been living with one guy after another. He knew her life story. We don't know that, but we may be able to find out some of this. It may take a little bit longer. We may have to prod. We may have to, you know, get into involved more conversation. But eventually we can get there as Jesus did. Jesus then, after establishing this conversation, a relationship of sorts, he began to reach into where her hurt was, where she was hurting. And Jesus, Ward Patterson said, would not allow her to look at only the surface of her life. That's the conversation. You've got to get past the surface. She had lived a life of unfulfilled dreams and unsatisfied desires and broken relationships. She thirsted for love and meaning and fulfillment. And Jesus found a way to reach into those places. And we can do the same. We've taken the time to get close enough to someone, to observe, to discover the difficulties, the trials of their lives. We can't see into their hearts the way he did, but we can still discover their hurts and their troubles by talking with them, by interacting with them. And Jesus did so not as a ploy, not as a strategy. He did it because he really cared, because he had genuine compassion. And if you don't have genuine compassion, don't have that conversation. You know, if you're really not caring about it, don't just use it as a technique. But Jesus knew her unsatisfied thirst was for much more than the water she could get at Jacob's well. She had a spiritual thirst. She had a longing only God could fill. And she had spent her life running away from God. And now God was near enough to touch. He was talking with her, sitting beside this well with her. Then Jesus helped her to see the truth about her life. He helped her acknowledge the truth. She was pushing back a little bit, but she eventually had to say, you're right. You know, you're right. I've just been living with these guys, one guy after another. Her life was a mess. Her life was going nowhere. But she had been afraid to admit it. Jesus helped her begin seeing the truth. She tried to distract him. You know, the next thing, if you're following this story, she tries to go over to this thing. The Jews and the Samaritans argued about where to worship God. Was it in Jerusalem? Was it out here on the mountain in Samaria near Jacob's well? You know, and they had this big debate, and they had each built their place of worship. And she wants to get Jesus involved in it. He's a prophet, so weigh in on this. Tell us what you think. She said, I'm not going there. It's not about where you worship. It's more about how you worship. Are you worshiping God in truth and in spirit, in your soul? And these words stop her short. It's like, okay, this is getting very real. His words reached down into the woman's heart. And she responded, I know that Messiah is coming, and when Messiah comes, he's going to explain things like this to us. He's still, you know, okay, you're getting there, but I still want to keep you a little bit away from me. And Jesus basically says, okay, let's talk about the Messiah. In fact, you're talking to him right now. Can you imagine how she felt when Jesus revealed who he was to her? When he acknowledged that he was the Messiah, he had come. He had come from God to help her. Can you imagine how amazed she must have been by his words? But just then, the disciples got back. Conversation ends. The return of the disciples actually interrupted Jesus' conversation with the woman that just when he was making great headway. They had walked to town to get lunch, and eating was all that was on their minds. And they're oblivious to the work that God was doing right then and there. Now, their return to the well was the woman's cue to go home. Now, all these other guys show up. I'm not talking with them. I talk with you. I wish we could have continued, but I got to leave. And so she just leaves. She leaves so quickly, she leaves her water jug behind. That's the whole reason she's there, to get water. She just leaves it behind. And she runs back to town. And I'm guessing that's because she was anxious to tell everyone about the man that she had met out there. She had gone to the well thinking that her greatest need was clean drinking water, but she had met Jesus and he had opened her heart to God once again. She'd been closed off for a long time. But now, I can't believe what he's saying. Is this really the Messiah? Could he be? She told everybody. She was so convincing as a witness that half the town went out to check out Jesus for themselves. Meanwhile, back at the well, while she's running home and she's doing all of this, Jesus is trying to get the disciples to see the harvest field that God was beginning to reap at that very moment. Go down to verse 41. Not to verse 31, I'm sorry. And he says to the disciples, are urging him to eat, and he says, I have food to eat that you don't know anything about. And then his disciples said to him, could someone else have brought him food? I mean, these guys are just locked into the physical. They're locked into the food. And he says, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish my work, to finish his work. Do you not say 4 months more and then the harvest? I tell you, open your eyes and look at the fields. They're ripe for harvest. And the guys are like, no, they're not. Things have just started here. What are you talking about? Even now, the reaper draws his wages. Even now, he harvests the crop for eternal life so that the sower and the reaper may be glad together. Thus the saying, one sows and another reaps is true. I sent you to reap what you have not worked for. Others have done the hard work and you have reaped the benefits of their labor. These disciples are clueless. And he's trying to wake them up. I have a much bigger thing going on here, a greater opportunity than lunch. Salvation is about ready to come to this place. Wake up. And many come out to meet Jesus. Many come to believe in Jesus. They invite him to stay for the next couple days. He stays, and it's unbelievable what happens. Many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. Verse 39, he told me everything I ever did. And so when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them. And he stayed 2 days, and because of his words, many more became believers. They said to the woman, we no longer believe just because of what you said. Now we have heard for ourselves. And we know that this man really is the Savior of the world. This is a story of the woman at the well. Now here's what I want you to take away today. How many people are like her in our world today? You know, the hopelessness of people is well documented today. Hopelessness has been escalating over the past few years. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. You hear it every day. You hide from it if possible. The national suicide rate is on the rise. It's increasing, surprisingly, among middle-aged and elderly people more than teenagers. Did you know that? There are a lot of people that are getting to retirement and saying, is that it? Is this what I'm supposed to be waiting for? Is this what I've been working for? I'm not happy. I don't have any hope. And a lot of them are taking their lives. It's amazing. On the other end of life, statistics bear out that the birth rate is declining. Fewer babies are being born. Recently, it was announced that our national birth rate is dropping due to anxiety, fear, and uncertainty about the economy. Why would we want to bring a child into this situation? What people are asking. That's just put in a nutshell. So we see evidence of hopelessness and depression almost everywhere we look. We were in Indiana this week visiting our son and his family. One morning, Jane and I took a nice walk along the main river in Columbus, Indiana. Nice park called Millrace Park. And along the rivers, there's this 12-story tower that they have built there so you can look out at the river and look across the park, see down into the city of Columbus and everything. And as we started up walking up the stairs, we were surprised to see these signs posted everywhere. You're not alone. National Suicide Prevention Hotline. They're on the ground floor. They're on almost every level, 12 levels at the top, right where people would jump, is a huge sign. It's probably 4 feet wide, 3 feet high, same thing. Don't jump is the message. You don't have to do this. You're not alone. So we talked to our son about it when we saw him a few minutes later, and he says, you know, they've had a big problem. A lot of people have been jumping off of there, killing themselves. They'll shut it down for a few weeks and then decide, well, we'll put up a few more signs. We'll open it again. This goes back and forth. It's an easy place to take your life if you're so hopeless that you can't imagine anything better is going to come along. And those signs broke my heart. Don't they, you? People are hopeless. We got back to our hotel room from the walk, cleaning up and everything, and we thought our room would have been cleaned up in between. We're going to stay there 2 nights, and the cleaning lady knocks on the door, says, can I get in and clean things, you know, even though you're here? And they said, no, sure, that's fine. Come on in. And so she's in the bathroom, cleaning things up, replacing the towels and everything. And she came out for a minute, and we said something about, you know, who she was and asked about her family, and she said she had 3 children, 2 boys and her husband, that kind of thing. And she said, but then she said, soon I'm going to just have 2. Okay. She said, because my husband has served me notice. And at first it was like, what's going on? She said, well, he's decided he wants to be with someone else. He's already started being with somebody else. He's still with her. He's decided to leave. And she said, would you pray for me? I said, yeah. We found out her name was Stephanie. We listened to her story, and we prayed with her. We got together in a prayer circle in our room, prayed for her. And I'm so glad she opened up to us. She's holding on to hope as a Christian. She's not hopeless. She has Christ. But she's hoping that God will somehow get into her husband's heart and let him see what he's doing is horrible. And it's horrible for him and for them and for the other woman, for everybody. And praying that God will get through. She is desperate for God to move in her life and her marriage. Now, my point in bringing this up is this. You don't have to look very far before you see people, like people that will jump off a tower and people like Stephanie that are just trying to get by day after day because what they're having to live with is pretty tough. So who are the women at the well in your life or in mine? You know, who are the women at the well that you see when you go out in town? Or maybe you go to your place of business. Or maybe they're in your household. Or maybe they're next door down the street. Do we even see them? Do we even understand the pain that they're going through? And if so, how are we supposed to reach out to them and share our hope with them? Well, Jesus has shown us what to do. Just perfect in the example he set. And this is what we must do. For many people, life is not good. Life is hard. Many have a great sense of worthlessness or hopelessness. Many folks are depressed. Many people are discouraged. There's frustration. There's a sense of resignation that things will never get any better. So why bother? Why try? Just muddle through or take your life if you have to. The Samaritan woman was hopeless too. I can't imagine what her thoughts and feelings must have been like when she met Jesus. She must have felt that life had no hope for her. But God wanted her and people like her to know that He's not forgotten them. He has not abandoned them. And He wants us to take the message of hope to those who are broken, those who are hurting. And through Jesus, there is hope. There is always hope. Doesn't matter what's happened to somebody. Doesn't matter the terrible, foolish choices they've made time and time again. They're on their fifth husband. You know, they're in a relationship again. Not going anywhere. It's awful. She's being beaten. I don't know the abuse. I don't know the neglect. I don't know the sadness of that lifestyle. But God reached out to her. And we need to begin reaching out in love to the hurting, hopeless people in our world, in our lives, our personal world. One by one, they can meet Jesus. And Jesus will change their lives. We can't change them. We can't fix them. We are not the answer. But we know the answer to the question, don't we? We have the hope that is Jesus. So like the woman at the well, we need to go out, share our testimony of what Jesus has done for us. And we need to share the difference that He could make in their lives. And Jesus will change them one by one from the inside out. Let's pray. Lord, I pray that You be on our hearts today. So many times we are so busy ourselves, or maybe we've even allowed ourselves to get hopeless. It's an absurd place to be as a Christian, Lord, because we always have hope in You, and You always have the answers for our lives, and You never leave us alone, as Prosper said in our meditation today. Lord, You are there, but so many people don't know You. So many people truly are ready to throw in the towel because it's just not going to get any better. Things will just continue to get worse and worse until the end. Lord, help us to see them. Help us to acknowledge their need for You. And help us to begin these conversations and these relationships and have genuine compassion as we do so. Take whatever time is needed, Lord. Whatever it may cost us. Lord, that's a hard prayer, but whatever it may cost us, Lord, help us to reach out to them and be there so that they can know Jesus. Lord, in our hopeless society, there is hope. His name is Jesus. It's in His name we pray.